to Dome Theory. I think it's episode 112. I was counting those off yesterday. Second week back here since we got the show going again, and it is a group chat edition. So Taylor McLeod is here, former producer of the show, now contributor on group chat day. The group chat's not here because I guess we've had a lot of technological issues. I think our group chat's too prolific for what Apple can provide on the back end, because our FaceTime's always breaking down. I got kicked out of the chat, so I've just been texting nobody for the last 2 days, I guess. And I've, needless to say, sent a lot of texts because a lot has gone down here. So let's debrief here, Taylor. We'll get to the Red Sox at the end because no one wants to hear about them. But we'll start with Beal here. I'm not surprised he's available. It feels a little late in the game for him to catch a ton of interest. But I'm also not with this group that thinks he's done or washed up or stinks. Do I think he's capable of getting back to the All-NBA level? Probably not. But at this point, if he's going to be the second or a third guy on a really good team, Celtics or otherwise, I'm intrigued. I wonder if there's going to be a little bit of this, oh, was he really going all out in Washington? Like, I'm stunned at how good he looks in this new spot.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. And I think I'm glad you said that, where you're not in really either camp yet. And I think that as we've progressed, I mean, even just since me and you started talking about basketball on airwaves in 2016, right? Like, things have changed so much since then, where you can't just be like, yeah, this is a good player who's a little overpaid, but he's still a good player. You have to be like, all right, this guy is the greatest player of all time. This guy is Jordan, or he is horrible. There is no in-between. And I think Beal exists in the in-between. And obviously the Washington situation where they signed he and John Wall to the huge contracts didn't work out at all. It didn't work the way they thought it would. They had to have Russell Westbrook show up and will them for that one season. But besides that, it really hasn't worked the way they thought it would. And I think because of the lack of team success in Washington, Bradley Beal has gotten overshadowed a lot. And also he's tried to do kind of like the Damian Lillard, like, no, I'm not going anywhere, I'm staying thing. Like, this is my home, this is my city. And so that's where I think you're right in terms of it maybe being a little late in the game for it to garner a huge return. But he still is an interesting piece. As it pertains to the Celtics, I don't necessarily know how or why it fits. And I think that adding Beal would maybe – there is a ton of potential, right? There's a ton of potential upside, but there's also so much potential for things to go horribly if they did something like that.
The Celtics?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're all in on 1 year, maybe two.
Right.
And there's a ton of talk about the – new CBA and all that, and we don't really have to get into the weeds on it too much, but without doing that, you're probably just looking at one of those teams, and this is usually how a big three goes anyway, right? That you're gonna have the three stars, you're gonna maybe have two starting level guys, and then you're gonna have no bench at all. It's gonna be all minimum guys or whoever you can find, or rookies or whatever the deal might be. I think that kind of team building dynamic gets exacerbated under the new CBA. And it gets even harder with the inability to sign buyout guys and stuff like that. So it doesn't make a ton of sense to me. What are the Wizards going to want out of this? And this actually is what I titled this video. What's it going to cost to get Beal? Because I look at it when the report first comes out and I'm like, oh, it's going to be Brown. Yeah, it's a Brown-Beal swap. Like, we've kicked around for a couple years here, obviously, because of the Tatum stuff. And I think that makes more sense than ever while we're debating whether Brown's going to be with the Celtics long term. But if they wanted to do the big three route, which I guess is what most people are dreaming of here, Smart, Brogdon, Pritchard, and picks. I don't get that from the Wizards standpoint. That wouldn't be the best offer.
I don't either. And I think it was Windhorse who... I think it was Windy who reported today, or at least like kind of predicted, not even predicted, just suggested maybe it would be something like Hero, Robinson, and then picks. And I think I think where Beal is right now, that's probably a decent framework for something.
I agree.
Where you have an impact starter, you have a bench guy who could probably start, but like with Robinson specifically, it's a lot of inconsistency. But it's where you have an impact starter, a fringe guy, and then picks. Like, I don't know if Beal gets more than that back. There was a time when he would have got back a huge haul, but I don't know if he's worth that anymore, especially because that contract is so big.
Yeah.
Like, it's not like he's a mid 20 million guy being like, all right, he's expensive, but he's, you know what I mean? It's like, no, it's in the 50s.
Yeah.
So this, you have to pay him like he is your best player on the team. And specifically for the Celtics, especially if you want to do the big three idea, I mean, you're looking at what, like $350 million plus per year deals.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Right.
Long term.
It just doesn't also make sense in terms of what we just watched happen. Like, yeah, you need more offense. You need someone who can, you know, might just be just a bucket getter. But, like, I don't know if it's worth it to bring in – I won't call him aging because he's really not that old yet. But a guy who's approaching the other side of that hill, who's still making that money and really hasn't proven it at any level except in the regular season.
If there was some hope, because I'm intrigued by Lillard in that sort of framework, because he can be the table setter. He can be the initiator. Right. He can be the guy who sets everyone up. This is tripling down on that wing, my turn, your turn, three guys who are scorers, which has been the Celtics' biggest challenge in recent years. I know everybody loves to throw Smart out the door this time of year, and that's probably what it would take to set something like this up. I keep arguing, I keep trying to remind everybody that he's actually good at point guard, and he actually does a good job initiating, and he actually plays well in that role when he's allowed to. And so you're going to lose more at that spot. And I know people are waiting to see Derek White propped up, so that's probably part of why they want this to happen, if they do. But you're thinner at the point guard spot at that point. You have less playmaking, and then you have three guys who don't necessarily need the ball to succeed, but scoring's their game. And that is the one thing, like, I know we're kind of all down on Beal right now so far in this video, but he is a great off-ball mover, maybe as good as anyone in the league. He is a great catch-and-shoot player. That's all he did all those years with Wall, and he probably, paired up with Stars, would be prolific at it again. And he is a little bit of a better playmaker than I think people realize, but not the kind of guy at the point of attack who I think is setting Tatum and Brown up, getting them off the ball and making stuff happen. He'd have to be much better in that role for me to really think about this.
Yeah, I agree. I think Beal's contributions, and I think he would contribute on the court. And I almost don't even like getting this far into this discussion because I don't think it's going to happen. I don't think the Celtics are trading for Bradley Beal. I don't think there's a world where that happens. I think his biggest way, though, if in a world it did happen, would be he would be the one in Tatum's ear that's like, hey, you are one of the best players in the world and you need to like go do it. Like, you are the guy. There is no one else coming to save you. Like, this is your team. This is like – so I feel like in that way, because of their personal relationship, he would be – someone great to prop Tatum up. And we've
would
seen,
that help? I mean, would that help Tatum, you think?
Yeah, I think so, to have like a real level of confidence that it like that he is who he is. Because I mean, we've seen games where he doesn't touch, and I think I said this last podcast, where he doesn't touch the ball for 8 to 10 possessions in a row in playoff games. And I think that with someone in his ear constantly telling him like that he can't allow that to happen, whether the game's flowing away from him or not, he can't allow that to happen, because a lot of the times when that's happening, things aren't going well. So I think Beal would, I think it would just be like a way to prop Tatum up, like emotionally almost within the game. And I don't know, but we've seen it over and over. Like every time Jason Tatum seems to make like a best friend on the team, they trade him right away. So like it was like Marcus Morris, it was Javonte Green. It always happens where like the person that the social media, we always see them like warming up together, always like, you know, whatever. And then they just get rid of them. So I think it would be best for Tatum just because of the personal relationship that's been documented so much. But again, I just don't think it's going to happen. And for I've seen it on Twitter today where people are like, all right, just, you know, get rid of Brown and put Beal in his spot and it'll fix everything. Like Jaylen Brown's a much better player than Bradley Beal.
I was just going to ask you that question.
Jaylen Brown is much better than Bradley Beal.
Today?
Yes.
Much?
Beal hasn't had to do anything for years now. Like, he, it's this thing where he's just kind of like wasting away. I mean, if there was a situation where I could be proved wrong, like, I guess, but like, in my opinion, just in terms of the games that Jaylen Brown has had to play in, and obviously this playoff series against Miami, the last one was tough, but like, in terms of the stakes, like, Jaylen Brown has played in much bigger games the last couple of years, and he's performed. He's gotten better every single year. He's an all-NBA player for a reason. He didn't get that just because there was like, oh, yeah, we want to get him the Supermax. So all the reporters got together and were like, yep, we're voting him. It's like, he's better than Bradley Beal.
The sentiment's so down on Brown right now. It's like everyone's ready to see him go, and he almost lost all credit for the full year he had with the one series he had most recently. If we're just stacking it up, though, and we're going to say Brown's better, which I do agree with, and the trajectory is certainly better for Brown, which is part of what matters here. Who's the better shooter between the two?
Probably Beal. I don't have the numbers up in front of me, and I can
go I'd go Beal. Who's the better cutter and mover off the ball?
Beal's probably technically better, but this is where you have to start factoring like age and explosiveness.
No, I'm just saying, I'm saying like today, like if we're just stacking stuff up today, like who's the better passer? You say Beal. Who's the better defender?
Not Beal.
Maybe Brown. Yeah. It's
certainly
close,
not
though.
Beal. I also think that, there's structural issues with the offense the Celtics run now that might not allow Jaylen to be the cutter he should be. I think that, and we've seen them devolve, like after that 21-5 stretch, it devolved into a lot of your turn, my turn basketball. And it wasn't as glaring as like when it was Russ and KD playing in the conference finals against the Warriors. And it was literally like, all right, whoever gets the rebound is going to bring the ball up, and that's their whole possession. Like, everyone get out of the way. It's not like that. It is a little different, but I think that, and this is where like, I like how you put it. They need a legitimate table setter so that, Even Tatum, I don't like how much Tatum is on the ball. I don't like Tatum bringing the ball up every possession and having to play point guard and also be their best scorer on the team. No. Like, I think it's more important to improve your structure and to let your two all-NBA guys who are 26 and 25 do what they're supposed to do, as opposed to adding another max contract who is relatively one-dimensional just for the sake of adding that max contract. And again, I'll say it, you know, till I'm blue in the face. I don't think this happens.
No, I don't. Especially in the three-star. It's too short-sighted. And I keep overlooking the new CBA. If you're building a team, you do have to think long-term, even if you do look at a three-man dynamic and say, this could get a championship this year, which I also don't think this necessarily does.
No.
On the other hand, say he doesn't go to Boston. Milwaukee emerges as a suitor today. I'm going to pull up the trade machine and see what that actually looks like here while I talk. But the Heat, of course, as well, step up as a suitor here. And the Heat are obviously going to be active. They're one of the teams, Taylor, whether you believe in them or not, that you have to consider is in the Celtics' way here, because they just keep beating them. They had them last year as well in that game 7, even though the Celtics snuck away there. But in series, the Celtics keep losing games to that team. And the trade you mentioned earlier, if it's Robinson, Hero, guys who didn't factor too much into this run, Robinson was pretty good, and then all their picks. You're throwing Bradley Beal in that dynamic in Miami. You're getting him to play in their system. And maybe you're getting the best possible play out of Beal next to Butler and Bam. Him in that zone. Him with the quality of shots that they create.
Yeah.
I'm a little worried about Miami if they get him.
And yeah, I think that's reasonable. And my first inclination, obviously, is to be like, well, Beal doesn't play full seasons because something always happens.
No one on the Heat does.
Well, that's the thing, right? That's exactly what I was about to say, is that I have this inclination to figure out all the reasons it wouldn't work. But because they're the Heat, and especially after this season, it's like, of course it would work. You know what I mean? They would just figure it out. And like, even if they did the same thing and they snuck in as a 5 seed because it wasn't all roses the whole season, but then they show up in the playoffs and do their thing, like, that's certainly a possibility. And I think that Hero, Robinson in picks is probably like I said earlier, is arguably the strongest and most likely return that the Wizards would get for Bradley Beal. But it's just so strange because I think that if they had wanted to capitalize on this trade market, it would have happened years ago, like probably a year and a half, 2 years ago. And so it is it's in a strange spot where Beal has, especially because of how poorly the Wizards have played, it's hard to get a read on how much of an impact he could have on winning somewhere that expects to win, just because we haven't seen him in situations even close to that for a long time at this point.
Yeah, you haven't. And now with that Heat deal, and I'm piecing together the Bucks deal right now, and I think he'd be intriguing on the Bucks too. I don't see how it comes together. Is Portis moving? Allen certainly is. And Connaughton. So whether it's Connaughton, Portis, and Allen, or Hero, Robinson, and whatever from the Heat, you're effectively just getting back, if you're the Wizards, these individual pieces. And I get it. You're splitting that $50 million that's hard to trade into three pieces, and then you're flipping those guys off for picks, and you're really tearing it down. We could probably get into some other Wizards stuff that would be interesting to trade for if you're the Celtics or whoever else here after Beal goes. But in terms of what you're getting back from Beal at this point, nothing's going to be good. So I do get why people are dreaming of Smart, Brogdon, and whatever. And if Beal really wants to come to Boston, he's got that no trade clause too, so he could force his way here. This is a conversation we had a couple of years ago. Feels a little bit overdue at this point, but it's still feasible now, where there's just not a lot out there for Washington. And man, I don't know how Washington fans are doing it. It's just been so bad for so long. I don't think any team has had less hope over a longer span.
Yeah. Actually, you know what's interesting is looking at it and looking at some of the pieces they have. And this is just because it's an easy frame of reference for you and I. It reminds me a little of how the Red Sox are, where you have this like one guy who is that guy, and then you have these pieces who are like, yeah, I mean, they should be okay, and then you watch it and it's like, wow, this is terrible. But we don't have to get there yet. I think Washington, I don't know, they were a special team in the mid-2010s. Not necessarily a championship contention team, but they played really hard and they won some tough playoff series, even the 7-game series against the Celtics. Like, when John Wall hit the three to end game six, I fully thought that the Wizards were winning that series. I didn't see the Kelly Olynyk, 30 ball coming around the corner, but it, like, they were some special teams. And I think that the John Wall injury stuff, where he got hurt and then was almost back and got hurt again, really threw a wrench into all of that. And I think that the biggest, and Bradley Beal signed the contract, and I fully understand why he signed the contract, and I understand his stance that he wanted to stay in Washington. He wanted to do it in Washington, whether that meant a championship or just a successful team. But I think they had a plan in place and it kind of fell apart, and it looks like they've been slowly trying to figure out how to pick up the pieces, but they've been like trying to plan how to pick up the pieces instead of just doing it. And I think now they're at a point where they're like, all right, we can't be paying this guy $50 million to be terrible.
Yeah, and those other pieces, Porzingis, $36 million for one more year.
Yeah.
You want an extension. He was excellent last year.
He was.
Only 27. Someone's going to want that guy, and so he's going to help someone out there if Beal does go. And Kuzma, same deal. It's a sign-in trade at this point, unless he opts in and gets traded on $13 million, which if they do trade Beal, that's probably what's going to happen. I don't think either of those guys are Celtics targets.
No.
Someone did send me a Monty Morris trade earlier for Brogdon, and I haven't been a big fan of trading Brogdon, but Monty Morris is pretty good.
I like Monty Morris. I think, to steer it in just a strictly a Celtics direction for a second, I think the Celtics need more players who understand their specific role and don't try to do anything outside of that role. Right now, they have a lot of players who have no role. There is no like structure. There's no hierarchy. There's no set thing. It's like right now with, we just saw it with Denver. Like, they have such clear roles for their players. And the Celtics have a lot of guys who are like, all right, when the ball swings to me, I can take anyone off the dribble. I can shoot over people from three. And they have a lot of players who are good at a bunch of stuff. But sometimes you need guys who just do specific things because then everyone has a job. And when everyone does their job, you're successful. And it's not so much ambiguity about, all right, who's going to be our two guys tonight who really have it going? Because the only time that everyone really, really falls into place is when Tatum is scoring 50. When Tatum's on, everyone's like, all right, that's the clearest their structure gets on offense and defense is when Tatum has it going. It's like, we're going to bring the ball up. We're going to get it to him, and he's going to make the right decisions, whether he needs to score or move the ball again. But that's the only time that it's not this kind of like – there's so many times when they bring the ball up, whether it's Smart bringing it up. Even when Tatum's bringing it up and he's not scoring, like, you have no idea what they're going to do. You know what I mean? They're going to run real similar beginning actions to get, you know, a mismatch up top. And if that mismatch isn't there, then you have a lot of isolation dribbling. And so someone like Monty Morris, who – he would just know his role. Like, he's not being brought in to be a jack of all trades. It's like, no, you're the, you know what I mean? Like, you're a backup point guard.
Yeah. And I think Brogdon did a pretty good job with that this year. Fans seem a little down on him now, I guess, because of the injury and an overall uneven playoff experience, I guess, from him. But start to finish, I thought he pretty much gave you what you wanted from him. And that does call in the question. We talk about, can this guy help and that guy help and stack this talent on the roster? Much like this Beal conversation we just had, Tatum and Brown just have to figure it out. The ball is going to be in their hands a lot. They're going to be playmakers more often than not. I don't care if they have 50 point guards on the roster, real point guards, fake point guards.
Yeah.
Those guys just have to get better. And they did not do a great job in the playoffs. Tatum was solid. Brown, great for two rounds, and then disastrous in the last one. Tatum, not great in that last one. They have to raise their game, and if Beal's here or not, still has to happen. If it's Morris or Brogdon, still has to happen. So I almost understand them running it back here and not trying to change things up too much, just because it is all about those Jays. And
it certainly is, and I'm glad you said it like that, and I think that there are a lot of people who are always trying to cook up some magic formula to how to fix it, whether it was fire Joe, trade Jalen, trade Malcolm Brogdon.
They've tried Smart. Everything at this point, like, haven't they?
They've tried a lot, and this is the luxury they have of having a 26 and 25 year old best player, is that if you are patient like you're supposed to be, and I understand that, it's almost a blessing and a curse that they made the conference finals in both of their rookie years and have been back so many times, because the expectations are so high for players who, I mean, it's very rare that players get like forged in the fire and come out the other side champions right away. I mean, like, we just saw Jamal Murray perform, you know, amazingly in the finals, and he's the same draft class as Jalen. But like, when I think about in terms of someone who's made it to a championship and even late round of the playoffs as a really young player and really dominated like that, like D-Wade comes to mind, and that was in 2006. There's probably other examples of it in there, like Kawhi with the Spurs, but he was, you know, he had the luxury of being behind like three or four, you know, like stamped Hall of Famers. So it's a little easier. So I think I'm fine with running it back. And at the end of the day, it does come down to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown have to be better. They have to be better because they are the two all NBA guys. They're the two all-stars. They are the leaders of this team. They're about to be, you know, a huge, huge chunk of the Celtics salary. And so everything is lined up where it's all on them now. There's other things that need to happen in basketball is more than just two guys. But when it comes down to it, when it comes to winning in the biggest moments, when it comes to, you know, dominating a series like the Miami series, like those two guys have to be on every single night. It can't be this thing where it's like even game six against Philly, like Tatum can't not show up for 44 minutes of a game. Like, it was amazing. It was, you know, legendary that he hit four threes in the last 4 minutes and scored 16 in the fourth to send them to the game seven, and then, you know, 51 in game seven. But I would much rather they just win in five or six with the, you know, with good basketball the whole time.
Of course, at CLNS brought to you by FanDuel, FanDuel.com/Boston. Still where you want to go to get your bonus bets, and the offer still stands. $1,000, no sweat bet when you first get started over there in Massachusetts specifically. Taylor out there in California is going to have to wait a couple weeks. But baseball season now.
I'm coming home Friday, 2 days, Bob.
Oh, yeah, it came up quick, snuck up on me. So baseball season being our only sport here, NHL done now. NBA over. Baseball is back in full swing, though, and there's no better place than FanDuel, America's number one sports book. And new customers get a no-sweat first bet up to $1,000 at FanDuel.com/Boston. Don't miss your chance to get a no-sweat first bet at FanDuel today. FanDuel.com/Boston, the official partner of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission. All right, there's some other stuff floating around. I don't want to get ball sacked here per se, but I've seen a lot of names floating in the draft talk rumor mill right now, and it feels to me like things are about to get pretty crazy here. Charlotte's shop at number two. They've kind of put a smokescreen up that it's going to be Brandon Miller at number two. Scoot Henderson's, of course, the guy who's had all that hype going back years, so I have a hard time thinking that they're going to pass on him. But if Scoot's at number three, the Blazers have a lot of leverage to trade that pick if other teams, winning teams, want to add him to their dynamic. We've, of course, kicked around Jaylen Brown for three and Anthony Simons on the Garden Report, which I think was Kevin O'Connor's idea originally. Now you're seeing the Pelicans are interested in that pick. Now you're seeing that Zion could be in play in a trade like this. Brandon Ingram, I've seen his name out there. And who knows what other stars can move around. So many teams are trying to shuffle around their rosters. These picks are extremely valuable, it feels like. Not to mention the Blazers needing to try to build around Lillard. So something wild could happen here. And Zion, it makes some sense to me that the Pelicans at this point might want to just move on and rid themselves of this experience and get another core piece to build around here, not to mention draft capital and whatever else would come their way. They would get an extraordinary offer, I think, at this point for Zion. I don't see it happening over the next week here if push came to shove. But I just have this feeling in my gut like something surprising is going to happen here. And that Beal rumor today was sort of the first shoe to drop that things are getting a little active. Things are going to move, and this could be, along with the offseason here, one of the more active periods from a trade standpoint than we've seen at this time of year.
Yeah, I think when it comes to New Orleans and Zion, them wanting to move him makes sense simply because he's not available. He doesn't play. And
that our guy Lindo compared it to Greg Oden at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he just doesn't – like, his impact when he's on the court, we've seen it from – I mean, the very first game he played in the NBA, like, we saw what he can do. Obviously, he was hitting, like, step-back threes that night and doing crazy stuff, so I don't expect that. But he is an incredibly impactful player, but none of that matters at all if he can't stay on the court for, you know, in between 60 and 70 games. Like, I at this point, I would never expect him to play a full season. Even like a modern full season where you're playing like probably like 75 and sitting out for a couple, like he needs to be on the court. And I wouldn't blame New Orleans if they move off of him. Even if they trade him somewhere and he becomes this Hall of Famer, like people will look at it and say, oh, New Orleans made this mistake. But like, I understand at this point, he just doesn't play. And if they're patient enough to let it happen, then sure. And I think the fact that he's gotten so close to playing and then goes away and comes back and then gets hurt again, because it's like Philly was very patient with Embiid, but they kept him off the floor. It wasn't this situation where they're pushing him to get on the floor, then he gets hurt again. They're pushing him to, you know, this and that and this and that. It's like, no, he was almost non-existent for a while and then showed up and played his way to where he is now, which is one of the most dominant players in the league. So I wouldn't blame New Orleans at all if they did want to move off of him. And I wouldn't blame them if they're, you know, willing to be patient, willing to, you know, stand by him through the injury concerns. I think that, and I don't think Jaylen's getting traded at this point, but I do think that number three and Anthony Simons is the most likely return for him. I think that that matches up with a lot of different things. And I think Pritchard will be attached to that too. I think that matches what Portland's looking for and would be matching what Boston would be looking for in a situation like that. I don't think Lillard's getting traded anywhere. I think he would retire. I think he's, like he said it on JJ Redick's podcast, that he doesn't even know how long he's going to keep playing because of how things work now. And so I don't know if he would want to subject himself.
He'll play out this deal for sure.
Well, right. And I don't know if he would want to subject himself to the circus that will be the rumor mill, the trade rumor mill around Damian Lillard.
Well, why is he naming all these hypothetical destinations?
I don't know. That I think the Instagram Live sometimes it just like it inspires just like insane conversations, and we've seen this across all avenues, across
or actions.
Yeah, anything. But this isn't even basketball specific. People get on Instagram Live and they're reading the comments, and you have people from all over the world just commenting random stuff, and then you have like, you know what I mean? So that's such an easy way. Until Damian Lillard comes out and is like, I'm requesting a trade. I'm not believing that he's getting traded. And so I think it has the potential to be explosive. I thought Zion to Houston was an interesting proposal that I've seen on the timeline a little bit. But until
is
stuff
Houston
really
going to be interesting?
I don't know. I think that you and I know that Ime is a good coach, but it'll be interesting to see him with
these
young guys who play like AAU basketball.
Yeah.
Because when he took over the Celtics, they were still like, you know, in the conference finals.
They were ready.
Yeah. So it wasn't a situation where you're dealing with one of the worst teams in the league and stepping in after being fired from your previous job. So I think I don't have a ton of like thoughts or even speculation about what's going to happen until the ball gets rolling a little bit. But it seems like Charlotte and Portland at 2 and 3 are more than willing to move those. I know I saw a report today, or it was just on Twitter, that Charlotte wants the world for number 2. And I don't think they'll get the world for number 2. And I also think that whatever they do with number 2, they're going to waste, because that's just what the Charlotte Hornets do. So
yeah, I think I said this on Monday that it's reminding me a little bit of Orlando last year, where they were saying, oh, we're taking Smith. Jabari Smith's our guy. And then all of a sudden, after trades don't come through, they're taking Banchero. And it was pretty much set in stone they were going to do that. And I have a hard time thinking Charlotte's going to pass up on Scoot, even though they have Rozier and LaMelo. Does LaMelo intrigue you at all if he does become a little expendable there?
I mean, potentially he's a great basketball player. I would be curious to see how he works in a organization with a little more, with larger expectations, where it's not so much like the LaMelo show. And he's proven that the LaMelo show is awesome to watch, and it can be successful because he's a good enough player. And I also think that it could be interesting, I guess. But whatever you have to give up, like I know that like the, you know, it's people who are rumbling about just move Jalen for LaMelo, get something. It's like, I'm all set with that. I certainly wouldn't.
That's tricky too, because Jalen's on a 1-year deal.
Yeah.
He's going to stay in Charlotte.
I wouldn't be interested in that at all. I think it's kind of like boils down to this. I'd be interested to see LaMelo in an organization with more expectations, but I'm not sure I want it to be the organization that I'm rooting for to win a championship.
Last thing I got on basketball. So you saw that Windhorse hit today. I think you mentioned it earlier. He said the Celtics are focused on re-signing Brown, and he left it at that. That's the first thing I've heard this offseason on the Brown front. I'm so interested in what they're going to do there, because if it comes out, oh, they're offering him a little bit less. Oh, they're coming in at this price. Because, you know, the stuff's going to start with the agents and all that, and leverage and negotiations. If they offer the Supermax, it's probably done. I can't imagine why that would create any indecision. Like, it's just a contract. You have to take it for Jalen. And if you're the Celtics and you want to keep him above anything else, and you have no interest in trading him, and you want to keep these guys together forever, you're offering that. So it almost seems like a done deal if that's what they want to do. But I haven't heard anything on that. And Windhorse today says they're interested in keeping him. That's their focus. Well, it's done if you offer the Supermax. There's no, you don't have to try to do it. It's done. And maybe Brown has more pause about staying than we think. Obviously, he showed some of that in the interviews this year. I'm so fascinated to see where this goes, because it's going to go in whatever direction it does fast, whether they trade him, whether there's this weird negotiation that goes on publicly, and perhaps they don't even get a deal done, but they keep him on the roster, and that would drive everybody crazy, namely me. Or they just get a deal done fast. What's your gut tell you is going to happen there?
I think they're going to re-sign him. I think that
at the Supermax.
The only way, and I don't know if the CBA would even allow this, would be if somehow there's a you convince these guys where it's like, all right, we're going to find a way to skirt around the CBA so we can still build the team in the way we want to, but you're still going to get your money. Like, you know how baseball now, they do the super long contracts and it's like, all right, so it's going to be a little less per year, but like you're still going to get the same amount of money over time. I don't know if it'll be something like that necessarily. I think the only way that he signs with the Celtics for less than the Supermax is if he goes to them and is like, all right, I am willing to take a smaller contract. But that would be like, I don't see any world where any player goes to a team, a player who's 26 years old. You know, I can see like a 34, 35 year old guy going to a team and be like, hey, I'll sign for a little less so we can figure this out.
Well, Rudy did it. So that's the example, is he could have taken 35. The Jazz probably would have given him that. But he took like 31% of the cap,
right?
Which was significant pay cut from what he could have got.
And so I think that there is, I guess that's on the table. If I had to guess now, if I had to put money on it, it would be that Jalen re-signs for the Supermax. It has been interesting that I don't think he's posted anything on social media since the season ended. Like, I don't think I've seen any activity from him. I haven't heard anything about where he's at. No pictures, no nothing. And This series was really like the first time that he and Jason Tatum were really, really embarrassed like that. They've had other times where they've lost, but it's always been something else. And even last year in the finals, all the focus was on Tatum. You know what I mean? It was Jalen showed up. Now, where was Tatum? And I think this was the first series where they were both embarrassed like that together. But specifically for Jalen, I mean, that last game was so tough. And especially when you had, I mean, in the moment, I didn't even realize that all the turnovers were going left. I didn't realize that all of them were pretty much the same thing that the Heat were clearly sitting on, waiting for him to do that so that they could strip the ball and get it going the other way. So knowing how Jalen has spoken about being a competitor and his ultimate goals, I think that no matter where he's at next season, he's coming back to prove that he deserves this All-NBA, that he deserves the Supermax. And if it is for the Celtics, I guess there's you know, a realm of possibility where he would take a little less money. But does that mean that Tatum's going to do the same thing the year after? Because then if Brown takes a smaller contract and then you Supermax Tatum, then the next conversation, and this is just how it goes with the NBA and especially in Boston, it'll be like, well, do they hate each other now because of that? Because Tatum, you know what I mean? So my gut tells me he's going to re-sign. I think the Supermax gets it done the quickest, which is why I would say that. But I don't know. Right now on June 14th, I don't think Jaylen Brown's getting traded. And I think he re-signs with the Celtics.
That's where I'd lean to. I don't know if there's a deal out there that gets you excited enough to move him. The Durant opportunity was the chance to, and I obviously was in favor of it back then. Would have been tricky because you're offering so much more than Jalen in that deal, but it would have resolved the situation. Gotten KD here on a deal much less than a Supermax for a Supermax level guy. And then you would have figured the team out around them from there.
But it's not even the Kevin Durant thing. It's like he gets hurt every season.
Yeah, on freak stuff.
Yeah. I'll give you that. He gets hurt in the craziest ways. Like he gets, it's never like,
my hamstring's pulled.
Right. It's never exactly. It is never, all right, I have a tight hamstring. He's warming up and hits a like slippery spot on the court and then gets hurt. Or like,
that was unbelievable.
Or he's just standing there and someone like takes a shot and like trips over someone else and then comes over and like stomps on his ankle or his leg or whatever. Like he does get hurt in freak ways. But, I mean, I'm not looking backwards at that necessarily. I think that, you know, if we could foresee how this season was going to go then and be like, all right, whatever. But I don't know. I think that Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are going to be on this team for a long time. I think that's Brad's number one priority. I think that's Wick's number one priority. I think that's ownership's number one priority. And for all the fans who are like, oh, yeah, just trading Jaylen Brown will fix everything. It won't. Like, you have to match what he provides. And there's not like there's a reason he's second team All NBA. He didn't get that on accident. He didn't. And it's also a lot of people who I'm learning, you know, over the years only watch the playoffs. So they only see those moments. And so they're not watching game 37 when Jaylen goes out there and scores 38 points when Tatum can't get it going, and you need that. And it, obviously that's not the ultimate goal, but it's all important. It all factors in, and I think both of them are going to be on the team for a long time.
If something needs to change, though, I think it'll be him.
Yeah.
Because that's structural to who the team is. And if you need to change who the team is because, yes, they have all the talent in the world, but something's not working here, I think that's what you look at, that dynamic. And many have questioned it throughout the years. I think the question remains valid of whether those two can work. I think they still need to prove it at the highest level. They can win a lot of games. They can go far in the playoffs. But can they win a championship? Time could allow them to.
I think their biggest – And people are saying it in the chat. They need an edge. They need to be tougher. They need to be, like, stronger. They need to – it's this whole – their whole thing, this playoffs where it's like, I don't know why we do this to ourselves. I don't know. I wish I knew.
That's what I'm talking – like, we know they have the talent. We know
– Exactly.
We know they have the schemes and stuff that they can play together, but there's just something intangible missing there. And maybe it just needs to be a change in personalities or a change in positions or – different person, like it's something intangible that's not working here. When you're not showing up for games, when the effort isn't right, when you're not doing the things on the court, that you can blame the coach for not setting you up in those positions. But I think we know the different coaches have wanted them to do the right things,
right?
And you know, train them throughout the year to do those things. And then when the biggest moment comes, for some reason, they just don't do those things. So when that's the issue, something mental, something intangible, or some sort of team dynamic, that's when you start to look at, even though the basketball trade might not be the best in the world or the talent might get a little bit worse, maybe the dynamic on the team gets better. And that's what's missing right now. So that's why I'm leaving the door open to anything this offseason. Nothing would surprise me, short of a Tatum trade. I don't think that's happening. So I want to give people one Red Sox minute, because I think we're just burning inside with it. But of course, brought to you by Athletic Greens. AthleticGreens.com/Garden gets you a year's supply of vitamin D, as well as 5 free travel packs when you head over there. 75 vitamins, minerals, adaptogens, probiotics, and more. You know the deal. Put in your water. You're getting all those things. You can get them in separate places, but here you get them in one. Great tropical flavor, the energy boost you need. AthleticGreens.com/garden. All right, Taylor, have at it.
The Red Sox need some AG1 desperately. They need a boost of energy. They are this is so much more than a GM, than a manager, than anything. This is like organizational. You have multiple groups of players now who just go through like the motions.
Who?
Like I'm talking like last year, this year, like all the players that people are clamoring they wish the Red Sox still had from last year. They're like the Walkas, the Evoldis, the Bogart. Like they were a last place team with all those guys twice. They finished last twice with all those guys. And so they won 4 World Series in 14 years and packed it up. They won 4 World Series and traded the second best player in baseball just because. Because he wanted to be paid what he was deserved. And the Red Sox had this thing where they're like, we're not doing a $300 million contract. Well, you fell 4 years behind the ball, finally gave out the $300 million deal, and everything else is gone. 2018 looked like it was setting up to be like at least like a 3 or 4 year run of, you know, we have these guys. A lot of them are young. A lot of them are homegrown. A lot of them are under control to an absolute – it's not even like this train wreck dumpster fire. It's so much worse because of how close, like I would almost rather them just like be literally playing like not the youngest prospects, but you have like this
tanking. Thing.
Yeah. Like it's this whole, we're going to try to compete and rebuild at the same time thing just doesn't work. Like the Dodgers are really the only team who have ever made it work. And everyone's like, well, Tampa's doing it. Tampa had 13 years of being like the worst team in baseball before they saw any success. Like they had a great structure in place to be terrible for a long time and figure out how to be terrible and figure it out. Like the Red Sox are, I mean, they, I don't know. It's just so frustrating. And we've heard John Henry say, like, you know, good players are expensive, and be like upset that good baseball players are expensive. And they just don't set the table anymore. For years, the Red Sox and the Yankees set the table, and now everyone else sets the table and they're unwilling to budge. I mean, they have the prospect capital to make moves, but they're not going to, because that doesn't make any sense to just trade off the guys that they rebuilt the farm system with. And it's just a tough situation all around. It's just, it's bad. They've missed. Dombrowski cleans out farm system. That's what he does. I mean, they won a World Series, so I guess it's worth it. But they're trying to rebuild the farm system and have this guise of competing. And even 2021, that playoff run was magical, and they had good players, and Schwarber was a great, you know, deadline addition, and Martin Perez was great. But at the end of the day, I mean, they needed 162 games to even make the playoffs. Right. And so it's just this, there are organizational issues here that are run deep, and it's just, it's wildly frustrating. And when I got the notification that they're in a rain delay tonight, I was thrilled.
I was there, of course, last night. I got up and started walking around at 4-0 because I just want to go see the views of the city and not watch the game anymore. I got some food. I sat back down. They went on a little run. Devers hit a pair of home runs, who I love, who I wish had more around him right now and could be that next David Ortiz figure. But here's my biggest issue, Taylor, and I know you have problems with a lot of the baseball decisions. No one cares about them anymore. Our viewership right now is about to take a nosedive. People don't like them. You talk to someone in Boston, and I'm obviously here in Boston, they say, F the Red Sox. I saw a great tweet that I sent to the chat a couple of days ago that said, and, you know, if we had Yankees people here, Yankees fans and Red Sox fans don't hate each other anymore. They hate their own teams.
Yeah,
and
that was a Kravis tweet.
That's what gets me more than anything is people. It's not that people, like, I would love for a chat full of people to be here right now and say, Sox suck, fire this guy, fire that guy, trade this guy. Instead, it's, who cares?
Yeah.
This team doesn't even exist.
Right.
I'm done with them. And that started for a lot of people in 2020. They bought a lot of goodwill back in 2021. In fact, it was so much goodwill that the place was packed and the energy was great, and it was one of the best crowds I've seen in a long time. And they lost that by just tearing this down.
They're trying.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll debate about that forever. But the biggest problem right now, beyond them losing the players people loved, is that they have no names out there that no one cares about. And they're not very good, which is always a formula for people to not care, pay attention. But that bad will combined with bad decisions, as you've talked about, and just an overall bad team.
Yeah.
We can't even talk about them. We don't cover them here at CLNS. Like, they're irrelevant.
It's not good.
They have to do something that makes people care again. And I know Ohtani's probably not coming, but something like that, just to show people that ownership's committed, that they're going to spend again, that they're going to try to compete again, and that they're going to try to have people show up to the ballpark again, because it was empty last night.
Yeah, right. And this is the last thing, you know, 30 seconds and then I'll get off. But they're in a position very similar to 2015 now, where they have the money available. They have the talent in the minor league system to make the moves they need to, and they have to do it. It can't be any more. There can't be another year of this. And that's just what it is.
Or you have to sell if you're ownership.
Well, yeah, if you don't care to sell, it's pretty simple.
At this point. All right, Bob. He's Taylor McLeod. This is Group Chat. This is Dome Theory. And we are out of here. We'll see you on Friday for a new edition of the show. Thanks, everybody.